Happy Wednesday, Technically Female Tribe. It's Jasmine here again for another episode of the Technically Female Podcast. Hope everyone is having a great week. So today I have Jennifer Biggs joining me today. She is the CEO of Ampagee. I'm so excited to get to talk and learn more about her experience. So Jennifer, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well today. How are you doing, Jasmine?
Doing good, doing good. Keeping it strong during COVID, but doing well.
For sure, yeah.
I'm so excited to talk with you today and to learn more about you. So, like, who are you? Provide me a little bit about your background. And I know you pursued chemical engineering. And, I mean, that alone is just a feat in itself. I did not like chemistry. But tell me a little bit about you.
Sure, yeah. Well, thanks for having me today. I'm happy to be here. I'm originally from Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
Oh, awesome.
And I actually grew up not knowing what an engineer was. I have this memory of riding on a bus to an away volleyball game. And my coach was asking me, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, I don't know. And she said, well, what about an engineer? And I said, to drive a train? And, you know, she busted out laughing, you know, just like you did. Yep. There. And you know, that was my reality, though. I didn't know what an engineer was. I thought engineers drove trains.
Yeah, and, for sure.
That story led to me being called a nickname Choo Choo for my high school sports era. Super talented. No, I'm just kidding. seriously, I didn't know what an engineer was. And, you know, I did really enjoy math and science growing up. And in North Carolina, we have a program called Governor's School, mm-hmm. which is application only, and only the most talented students were selected. And, man, I wanted to go so badly. And I applied, but I wasn't selected.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, rather than giving up, I said, well, what else can I do in the summer? And I found an NC State summer college for high school students, and that's ultimately where I was introduced to engineering. Yeah. So it was a blessing that I didn't get selected for Governor's School, and a reminder, you know, to always find the window when the door closes.
Oh, for sure.
Love. But then, you know, in that time when I was, you know, at the camp and then around that time of my life, somebody told me that there was no way that I could succeed in engineering. Hmm. And, well, if you want me to do something, just tell me I can't do it.
Same here.
And that will push me to work my hardest, you know? So I really went in because someone told me that I couldn't do it and they didn't think I would be successful. And then I ended up loving the curriculum and, you know, liking math and science. And mm-hmm. I did love chemistry, I have to say.
Oh, wow.
So that's ultimately kind of why I chose chemical engineering and then ended up falling in love with it.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I can definitely agree with you on the not knowing what an engineer was, because I just thought same thing. It was like someone that did a train, like, I don't know anything about that. And then, you know, just the lack of exposure to really the applications of engineering, right? Mm-hmm. And like not knowing like, oh, no, there's like hundreds of different types of engineers and you can major in something, but it doesn't mean like you have to be, you know, you're in chemical engineering, it doesn't mean you have to be a chemist, right? Like you can love chemistry, but maybe not want to go that route. So that's cool. That's really cool that you did that. And so you got your chemical engineering degree, and then where else did that take you? Did you go into that field when you graduated or from school, or what kind of did you do next?
Sure. Yeah. So I had done a couple of internships for ExxonMobil when I was a student, and you know, those were really heavy engineering internships, thinking, you know, you're sitting behind a desk, you're mm-hmm. working in Excel and like very fancy programs with equations. And that was the summer I learned how to drink coffee, because I just, you know, it's hard to sit behind a desk and stay awake and active all day.
Oh, for sure.
And so after school, I had a couple of offers. You know, one was to go back to ExxonMobil to sit behind the desk and really crunch the numbers. Mm-hmm. And another offer was to go work in manufacturing. And I really didn't have any exposure to manufacturing. I had an offer to go work for P&G in manufacturing. And, you know, I love people. I enjoy working with others, mm-hmm. having an active day, having a day. Every day is different and I'm solving new problems. And when I went for the on-site visit at P&G, that's really what I experienced, is wow. the thrill of being up and active and working with others to solve problems. Mm-hmm. And so the offer with ExxonMobil was, you know, significantly higher monetary offer.
Right.
But I turned it down and I went to go work for P&G because it was the type of work that I wanted to do. Mm. You know, and as I think about the people listening to this podcast, you know, it's okay to turn down the offer that everyone else might pick in that situation if it doesn't align with what you personally see as your goals and what would make you happy.
Yeah, that's so good. That's such a good nugget. I think so often we let other people deter us because of what we think or other people think we're supposed to be doing. I've had that similar experience. I'm an engineering major by trade, but have gotten into more strategic work and recruiting and within diversity space. And I had that same conversation where someone's like, you know, that's like the words, career suicide. Like, mm-hmm. you're not going to make any money. You're going to like not, you know, do well. I'd come from consulting. And I was just like, you know, for me, sometimes it's not about the money, right? It's to your point of like that passion that's ignited, that you get to do what you love to do, that collaboration, dealing with people. That was me too. Like, I love people. And I could have been a programmer, a software engineer, but I like people. And I think too often we just, you know, kind of let other people guide us in that path. So I applaud you for being bold. And, you know, sometimes, you know, that check that's coming in looks real nice. And it's like, ooh, mm-hmm. what I could do with that money. But I always believe it always will come back tenfold to you. You know, following your passion will always lead to the reward that you're probably going to be looking for.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so you mentioned a little bit that you worked for P&G in manufacturing operations management. Manufacturing operations isn't really a popular field, at least not that I'm familiar with, but it's, you know, it's not seen as glamorous, and, you know, for two, it's an industry that there's not a lot of women that are highly visible in that field. And let me know if I'm wrong, because I just don't know. I think you may be the first one I've met that has that experience. And so how did you get interested in that, and what barriers existed within this male dominated industry that you were forced to tackle?
Sure. You know, when I went for the onsite at P&G, I really was excited by the problems they were solving. Mm. You know, I spent a full day there and just listening to, I didn't really know what I was listening to, but I loved listening to the problems and how they were solving them together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the culture at P&G was something that I wanted to be a part of. So that's really kind of what got me interested in manufacturing. And then once I jumped in, I realized how male dominated it was. And P&G mm-hmm. does a good job. They have a lot of females and males, but especially as you rise the ranks in manufacturing leadership, you know, it becomes more male.
Oh, yeah.
And the, you know, the associate workers, or the workers, you know, who are second generation manufacturing line workers are mostly male. So mm-hmm. In that typical kind of male dominated field, as I entered, and, you know, we're doing this podcast virtually, so you can't see me, but, you know, I'm 5'2 and 115 pounds, and I'm not seen as a threat. You know, I'm very unassuming when I walk on the floor. The first day in the plant, someone asked me if I needed help finding my parents, you know?
Wow.
And rather than take that as a, I'm never going to be successful here,
mm-hmm.
I took that as a, okay, well, how can I use this as a strength?
Mm.
And what I found there is, if you're unassuming and people don't expect you to be, you know, powerful, then they'll start a conversation with you mm-hmm. and they'll tell you things they may not tell their boss or yep. their boss's boss. And so I started building great relationships and learned that that's how work gets done.
Mm-hmm.
Working side by side with people, asking great questions, building trust with others.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in that male dominated industry, I developed relationships, and then I used a strong work ethic
mm-hmm.
to establish my reputation, and that's really what carried me forward.
Yeah, I think there should be a class on that in college, of like your reputation being like the end all be all. I think a lot of times people think it's the grades or the GPA. Mm-hmm. I mean, those help, mm-hmm. but like your reputation and setting that early and that foundation of, hey, I want people to be able to trust me. Like I always say, like, if you don't trust me and I don't trust you, it's never going to work. It's a two-way street. It's like fundamental to who I am at my core, and it sounds like for you as well. And I think sometimes those things are talked about as the soft things, like the soft skills. Like, well, of course you can trust me. I'm like, but everyone you can't trust, right? And so being able to build that rapport with people is huge. And it may seem like something that's really easy to do, but as you've kind of alluded to, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, well, growing up, you know, life is full of resets. You reset at the end of every academic year. Mm-hmm. You reset at the end of every class, and you get all of these opportunities to reinvent your reputation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But real life isn't like that, as you know, and you get into a job, and your reputation really carries with you from there forward. There's no reset button. Even if you go to a new company, there are still people in the community who know who you are and know your reputation.
Exactly. And I think sometimes you think some of these companies, which they are large, and it's like there's no way anyone would know what happened a few months ago. And it's like, even though companies are large, people talk. Mm-hmm. it's big, but the like information can easily get carried through to other teams. And so you just never know, like even if it's someone that's below you or maybe getting into the company, like you have to put your best foot forward because they could be your boss one day. Like you just don't know. And so I always am of the mindset of like, you got to treat people with respect and generosity and humility and be helpful because that says a lot about you. But then that also will set you up to be successful because people value that. And then they'll value you and your perspective. So that's interesting, the story too, about the, where are your parents? I've had someone say to me, like, are you the intern? And I'm like, I'm grown. Like, I'm like 30. Like, I am not. I'm just look like. And I guess you could take that as flattery, as, you know, we are aging, but like still have our youth, and at least in the exterior. But it's one of those things where it's like, When does that stop, right, in the workplace? Like, when is it okay for someone to say that to a female of like, oh, you are you sure you're old enough to handle this? Like, can you, like, you know, measure up to what we need? Like, are you going to be able to bring it? And I think, and what I'm getting, to correct me if I'm wrong, like, your voice, your ability to connect with people, your opinions is really what's carried you through to being seen as valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I never let that first reaction of them, you know, are you looking for your parents? Mm-hmm. Are you supposed to be in this meeting? Throw me off my game. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that when I open my mouth, I'm going to contribute something of value. Mm-hmm. And it's great to watch people realize that in the conversation.
Yeah, no, for sure. And to that breath, I know you talked about this a little bit, but I want to dig a little bit deeper. What are some tips or tricks that you could share with the Technically Female Tribe on how to successfully take control of your career? It sounds like you're a pro at connecting with people, but is there anything else in particular that would be you maybe wish you knew when you kind of started out in your career way back when and to take control of that?
Yeah, for sure. You know, the thing that stands out to me the most here is no one cares about your own career as much as you do. Mm-hmm. It is up to you to own the relationship with your boss. Even as someone who was hired 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. you own the relationship. You schedule the one-to-one. You show up prepared mm-hmm. with an agenda. Mm-hmm. You ask for feedback. You listen to understand. You know, sometimes I'm mentoring young females, and they mm-hmm. say, well, my boss forgot that we had a meeting today. And I said, well, were you standing outside her office with your agenda? Mm. And were you ready? Like, you own it. If you leave it up to others, you have to remember that they don't care about it as much as you do.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that when I was first out of school, and it took me a long time to learn that. So I always try to share that you own the relationship with your boss, and it's up to you to kind of own your career. Yeah. And then, you know, the next thing that really comes to mind there is, there's so many ways to get to a solution to a problem. Mm-hmm. And as a person who is looking at a problem, first ask better questions mm-hmm. to understand the full scope of the problem. You know, if the problem is a box, you need to be able to visualize that box and see every side of it. And then find a solution that fits with your personal style. Because mm-hmm. you're going to execute it to the best when you believe in it mm-hmm. and when you know that the way that you're solving that problem matches your strengths.
Yeah.
and really being true to yourself, like knowing what's important to you and holding yourself accountable to that. You know, like as an example, you know, in a manufacturing area, you have a piece of equipment that's performing not to the expectation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some people approach that with data, and I'm going to collect all the information I can about this equipment and crunch the numbers. Mm-hmm. And I approach that by walking on the floor and talking to people.
Yeah.
And understanding what their perspective was, and then realizing that, oh, they didn't have the right tools to get the job done. It wasn't that the equipment was incapable. It was that we didn't have the right support. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of different ways to solve a problem, and finding the way that fits best with you and that you can execute to your best.
Right. And that gives you a value proposition, right? Because to your point, everyone's going to solve a problem differently, and your solution mm-hmm. provides that diverse perspective or thought leadership that they may or your team may not have gotten without you, right? And so leaning into that, your style, I love how you said that, that part mm-hmm. of like being you and bringing you to work and what you believe and what you know and what you understand. And then the other part of active listening, I heard, like seeking to understand and to learn, and not always to have the answer, but to learn, to formulate what the answer may be. Because people value people that listen, right? Like, people value people that listen, that aren't just, you know, trying to check the box to get it done, but really want to build a relationship and rapport. And then the part about your boss and taking ownership of like that relationship, like nothing says like more of like, I'm about my business than you have an agenda, you setting up the meeting, you saying, these are the things I want to talk about, you staying outside of the door of your manager's office, because they're like, wow, like, this woman means business. She's not kidding. She's taking control, to your point, of her career, and she's not going to go away. Now, some may be frightened by that, but that just means maybe that's not the right manager for you, and that's okay too. That's then when you position yourself into other opportunities, or considering other people, or find other people that may not be your direct manager that want to lean into you and want to grow you and develop you. And, you know, that's okay. Sometimes your manager isn't always that person. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. But you need to have that person that keeps you grounded, that challenges you too, to be better, because that's the only way that you'll grow.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. And so, you know, speaking of growing, you are a CEO of your own organization, Ampagee, a technology company focused on helping manufacturers engage every frontline worker in continuous improvement. Like, talk about growing and taking control of your career. Like, man, I have so many questions on this, but I'm going to start with, you know, what prepared you the most to be a CEO of your own organization? That's baller, by the way, that you're doing that. Like, I one day aspire, but I don't know, we'll see. But like, what prepared you for this moment, and what was the moment when you knew, hey, you know what, I want to run my own organization, like I want to be the boss, like tell me all the things.
Yeah, well, you know, you said in control of your career. And, you know, I do want to stop you here and just say, you know, I've never felt in control of my career. I have always felt in control of my behavior, in control of my results, my reputation, as we've talked, but not my career. And I think a lot of women, when they're starting out, they think, you know, this is my path, and I've laid out these blocks here, and this is where I'm going to go. But, you know, there's no stepping stone path, and I've never necessarily felt in control. Mm-hmm. But, you know, specifically in this instance, I knew that I liked people. I was humbled when I graduated college, because I went in to the workforce thinking that I knew everything. I had this shiny minted degree. And, you know, the people that I was working with thought, oh, here's another girl coming out of school that knows nothing. Mm-hmm. And neither one of us were right. Mm-hmm. You know, we both had things to contribute to each other. You know, someone once, a trusted mentor once told me, you have two ears and one mouth. Mm. Listen first, speak second.
Yep.
And so I always did that with other people. Always thought that I could learn something from anybody, from everybody. They have something to learn from me as well if we work together. And I realized early on in my career that you can't be successful as an individual when you work with a lot of people.
Yes.
You know, I am not a individual contributor. Right. And I was an individual contributor kind of earlier in my career, but I wasn't 100% of an individual contributor because I needed other people in order to be successful.
Right.
Maybe I needed their data, their help, their knowledge, cooperation, support, feedback. It reminds me of in college, we used to hate the group projects because we yes. had to manage others.
Yes.
But that's life. You know, life is one big group project.
Mm-hmm.
So for Ampagy, you know, when a situation came up, I raised my hand and I said, I want to leave this company. And I was fortunate enough that the investors and the team put their faith in me and leaned into me and gave me the opportunity to do something that I'd never done before. And so I, you know, take it one day at a time and just try to be the best version of me that I can be.
Yeah, no, I think that's all you can do. I do like your point on like, you don't have control of anything. Cause I think as women so often like, oh, if I do like X, then Y is going to happen. And then it's always funny cause you do X and then Z happens. It's like, I didn't plan for that. That's not what I expected to happen. And I think there's a lot of pressure where you feel like you have to control things. And it's so interesting that, you know, you just mentioned what I heard you say was you were in the right position in the right place. You didn't know that you were going to be the CEO of an organization, but you were positioned right by the way that you treated others, by the way you wanted to learn, by the way you wanted to listen, and everything else fell into place, right? Like it could have been a happenstance, but I always believe things don't just happen. Like it's not a coincidence. They happen for a reason. And so like just being ready too, like it's not just positioning yourself, but it's like when you are positioned, are you ready? Like, because it could have been something to you, which it may have been, something's like scary. Like you want me to like run this organization, like, mm-hmm. but you had done the work to prepare to be ready. Even if you're not fully ready, but just enough to, you know, say, yeah, I can do this. I have at least a little bit of confidence and I can figure this out. Or I'll surround myself with people that can help me figure this out together, right? And that's a part of the process that I think we don't talk about often. Like, first it's a yes, but then it's like getting ready for the yes and being able to position yourself to say yes or to have the opportunity to be asked to do something like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, you know, part of it is, you know, there's so many men I know that you truly, truly fake it until they make it.
Yep.
And women are so much less likely to fake it until you make it. Mm-hmm. But like, lean in and know that you're going to figure it out. You figured everything else out in your life leading up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a roadmap of exactly how I'm going to do everything for the next 5 years, but I'm going to figure it out when I need to.
Right.
The only thing that I'd add to what you say is, yes, you know, all the situations have prepared me to this point. But when you get there, you've got to ask for it.
Mm.
Ask for what you want. Just be direct and say, I want to leave this company, or I want to take that role, or I want to solve that problem. You always have to ask for it. I think women, sometimes they think someone is just going to offer it to them, and they're not. You have to ask for it.
Wow. I literally, Jennifer, just got goosebumps because that directness is something that I, you know, being raw and real, I struggle with, like being direct. Sometimes I'm just like, well, I think you understand and I'm working through it and being emotionally vulnerable and expressing. This podcast is one of the avenues that I'm working on this, but I think you got to say what it is. I mean, to your point, men say it all the time, like, this is what I want, whether they're qualified or not. They're like, well, this is what I want to do. And somehow, you know, you turn around and then like they're doing this, like, wait, how? Like, I'm way more qualified, but they spoke up. They were direct. Mm-hmm. They said, this is what I want to do. This is where I see myself. How can you either help me get to that or how am I going to get to that on my own? So that's directness is so important. Definitely another thing that's not taught. I'm like, man, if I can make a list of all the things that they should teach you in school, we could open up a school, Jennifer. At this point,
I mean, it's your podcast, right? I mean, you're filling the gap here with this.
Seriously. And so, you know, for those who are listening to the episode today and who are aspiring to be leaders or even CEOs of companies one day, what is your advice on becoming the best leader that you can be? Like, what's one thing you wish you knew prior to leading your own organization, or one thing you did know that's been helpful in leading others and leading an organization?
You know, my motto as a leader has developed into a strong belief that people want to be great. And in every conversation that I have, whether it's, you know, in my current role, whether it's an investor or an employee or a customer, I try to put myself in their shoes and come in with the foundation that they are trying to be great at what they're doing. Mm. And so anytime I interact with another person, I always try to make that the foundation of conversation. And you'd be surprised how much you can cut away of the clutter and the drama if you just believe that people want to be great.
Yeah.
So that's really been my motto as a leader, and has pushed me to believe in the best in others.
Yeah, that's, and you say that so like effortlessly, and I think you clearly are really good at that, but some people really struggle with that. They're like, you know, it's always, some people are like very conspiracy theorists, like, she didn't speak to me, so we're not gonna be able to work well together. It's like, well, maybe she just had a bad day, maybe she's hungry. There's so many variables and factors, especially now with everything going on in the world. It's like you really just don't know what's going on with people. And I think to your point, like accepting people for who they are, like you just don't know the situation. And, you know, having that, like I always say, like grit, but then also grace, like, and the empathy is big, because there's a lot of, you know, people that don't have empathy. But I think to your point, like empathy and expecting greatness and expecting the best until, you know, further notice or further displayed is a good way to acknowledge people for who they are. And people appreciate that too, because we all fall short, right? Like we all have our rough days, or we all have things where it's like, man, I could have did that a lot better, or man, I could have said that a lot nicer. But it doesn't mean that you don't have good intentions, right? Or that you're malicious. It just means, hey, I'm just off today. Today's just an off day.
And you know, there's a theory in psychology called the behavior attribution theory, which says that we judge others by their behaviors, but we judge ourselves by our intentions. And so, you know, when you think about that, like if people judge us based on our behaviors, you know, it doesn't always match our intentions.
Yeah.
And if we can reflect that to the other person, you know, maybe the person that just cut you off while you're driving, you know, maybe they're having a different kind of day, you know, to your point, than you're having.
Yeah, that's true. Wow, I like that. Intentions versus behaviors. Behaviors versus intentions. Interesting. Very interesting concept. But I really do appreciate you taking the time today. And as we wrap up every episode that we have on the Technically Female podcast, I ask my guests to provide a word to the wise. So a word, a statement, a poem, a quote, or just anything that you want to leave the community today to empower them as they continue their STEM journey. So what do you have for the tribe today, Jennifer?
Sure. I would remind the tribe to strive to have a growth mindset. A growth mindset is the belief that you can grow and you can change based on your efforts. To believe that you, your true potential is unknown and is unknowable, but if you continue to grow, you can always improve it.
For sure. Oh, that's so good. You have to think growth, because if you think small and not big enough, man, you're missing out on a lot of opportunity.
If you shoot for the stars, you might hit the moon. But if you don't even shoot that far, then you're going to land exactly where you thought you would.
Yeah, no, that's so good. Thank you for that. That's so good. I really appreciate you, Jennifer, for being a guest on the Technically Female podcast today. And Tribe, I hope you were inspired and empowered by Jennifer's messages today and her gems that she gave, and I hope that you continue to listen to our podcast. If you would like to be a guest on the podcast, as always, reach out to me at technicallyfemale@gmail.com. Otherwise, continue to share the STEMinism.